So we're in the second week of a series on radiance. If you missed last week, we talked about excellence. So I just invite you to go back and take a listen to that. I just think it'll help as we build going forward. So right after last week's sermon, which you know, I felt pretty good about. I felt like it was one of those pep talk sermons. And so I'm in the hallway, and someone caught me in the hallway, and she grabbed me by the arm, and she says, "I'm just too exhausted to be radiant." You ever feel like that? Man, I totally get that. There are days that I tell God, I don't feel like being radiant today. Just not today. Yesterday, maybe. Maybe tomorrow, but not today. But then he reminds me that radiance is not a feeling or even something we do. It's supposed to be who we are all the time. Our radiance is intended to outshine our fatigue, outlast our difficult circumstances, and crush our obstacles in life. One of my favorite quotes to describe life is this. I've got it up over my desk. That you and I are running a marathon while being stalked by an enemy and haunted by our flesh. In other words, we live inside fragile bodies while living in a fragile world, and it's all held together by time. Time is the only thing that holds it together. The fact is, the clock is ticking. We are a people who live by the clock. Everything has time connected to it, and time keeps moving along no matter what we do. We can't slow it down. We can't speed it up. It just steadily ticks, 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 ticks until all this earthly time is gone. And some days you beat the clock, but most days it beats us, running out before we've achieved, accomplished, attained, or much less completed the day's expectations, much less everybody else's expectations of us. The fact is, many of us are suffocated by our efforts to get life from sources other than Christ. And this is often how our light gets dimmed and how it fades. It's why we can lack radiance in the world. We always think, if only I had a little more time. We think we just need to be a better time manager, right? And so we buy books and we buy planners and we have color-coded charts and we have spreadsheets. And we think, gosh, you know, if I could just find balance, I just need a little balance. If I could just find a little balance. As if balance was the answer to the problem. As if balance was even a biblical goal in the first place. We think that if we could ever achieve this mysterious place called balance, that we could do better, feel better, maybe we could even act better. We live as if life is nothing more than a high wire act performed while juggling spinning plates. No one has ever come to my office and sat down and said, "I just wanted to come to report to you, Pastor, I have found balance." It's glorious. Nobody's ever made that appointment. The real issue, in my opinion, is that we fail to understand how precious time is, and by the time we finally get it, we're almost out of it. Why is it that the things that matter most in life continue to come at the expense of the things that mattered least? Why do we continue to repeat over and over and over again things that are not working, patterns that are not working? So let me be clear right up front. I am no more qualified to preach on this subject of time than I am at explaining string theory or maybe guarding a box of cinnamon rolls, right? I am an oft-confessed but not cured workaholic. I like to work. No. I love to work. I love to work. And to be honest, I don't always know how to stop. I don't know when to stop. I don't leave the office well at the end of the day, much less early. I am easily duped into the illusion that I can catch up or maybe even get ahead. I just need a few more hours, just a couple more hours, one more hour, just surely one more hour, and everything will be fine, right? A funny thing happened when Dee Dee and I became empty nesters is that no longer in our life, because Dee Dee's equally as bad as I am, there was nothing in our life to draw us home other than each other, right? I mean, we didn't have kids to feed anymore. There wasn't sporting events to get to. Literally, there was no reason to leave the office. We hadn't calculated that we would be like, who knew we could have some extra time for never catching up. So the thing is, I hate telling people no, although I am getting better at it. So maybe today is just for me, right? Maybe today is just for me. But my guess is that I'm not alone. I think there are people, or we are people, who remain enslaved to the burden of attempting to make life work by trying harder. How's that working for you, trying harder? I'm just gonna tell you this morning, it's not working at all for me, right? Because I keep trying harder, and there still does not seem to be enough time. I believe exhaustion, fatigue, and a lack of margin directly affect our radiance. It dulls Christ in us. The truth is, most of us had a picture in mind of how we thought life might turn out when we started this thing, started being responsible for our life and this kind of thing. This picture was made up of lots of components: our jobs, our marriages, our children, our grandchildren, our friends, everything we hoped life would be, including our own performance. Occasionally life matches this picture, but most of the time it does not. So we work harder, we strategize, we demand, we whine, we complain, we manipulate, we control. It's like grasping at the wind for stability when you're losing balance. And all the while, the clock is ticking. What makes this crazy is while we're engaging in these exhausting efforts, I think in the back of our minds, somewhere deep in our hearts, we know it's not working. We know it's futile. As Christians, we are called to a way of life categorized by sanity, stability, security, and rest. Facing this gap between how we know things should be and the reality of how things are can be defeating to us if we allow it to be. Understanding this issue of time is the only way we'll ever come to grips with why we continue to be emotionally controlled by people and circumstances rather than resting in what Christ has done for us, in us, through us. It's why Jesus promises that if we'll remain in his word, if we will seek his face, if we are sensitive to the movement of the Spirit, then change is happening in our hearts right as we are engaging those activities. In other words, we don't have time issues. We have kingdom priority issues. It's probably our main issue. So I want everybody to turn to the book of James. So you may know this, that James is known as the Nike epistle. You know this? To just do it, because that's all he does. For five chapters, he says, do this and this will happen. You do this and this will happen. You do this and this will happen. It's just the just do it epistle. Go to verse 13. This is his advice. He said, now listen. Listen up. Listen up, you, he says. Did it? Was that in your Bible? It was just in my Bible. There's lots of listen up. He said, today or tomorrow, you who say, we will go to this city or spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist. Some translations say a vapor. You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. If anyone then knows the good that they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is a sin for them. Right? So this is where this time thing comes into play, that if you know the good you're supposed to be doing with this one and only life you have, and you delay it, you put it off, you don't do it, then it's a sin, James says. Living beyond the will of God for your life is foolish and arrogant. Our life is but a mist. It's a vapor in the light of eternity, here today, gone tomorrow. There are just some things in life that I'm telling you this morning that won't wait. What is it about time that causes us to live like it will never run out, all the while complaining about never having enough of it? I personally don't find looking back to be very, very helpful. I don't find it to be a useful tool. If looking back were helpful, then there's a pretty good chance I would never sin again, right? Because I could look back and go, that didn't go so well. I should not do that again. But we look back and we don't learn anything. About this time of year, most people begin what I call resolution remorse. Regrets begin to stack up pretty quickly. Oh, we've tried. We've really, really tried. But trying lacks the discipline of training. I believe time only yields to the dogged determination of training. I've spent the last few weeks trying to imagine, as we prepare for the sermon, how does God view time? How does God view time? Does he think about time like we do? My guess is God's not ripping pages off the calendar at the end of every month. I don't think God thinks about tomorrow being a new day. It's just a continuation of life. Because in this world we live in, part of what we know is that he has believers that are with us today. It's Sunday for some believers. For other believers in the world, it's already Monday. Does God have two calendars? Oh, for that side of the world to believe? I mean, his plan is for life eternal. It's intended to have no end. So why would God be concerned about what we call the day? I'm just guessing this time ball thing doesn't get dropped in heaven. Again, these are just my thoughts, but I don't picture God thinking about time like we do. I think he gives us this one and only life here as a warm-up act for life beyond here. What if, and I'm just saying what if we get a certain amount of time and then we're placed in a broken, sinful world that is fragile, full of things that would steal time from us? So this battle wages between the time we could have had and the time bandits that want to steal it. Things like disease and self-destructive habits and other selfish people and apathy, countless sins and missed opportunities. Then on top of that, God gives us free will, and we can choose to exercise or not. We can eat fruits and vegetables or not. We can eat quinoa, whatever that is. We can ride motorcycles without helmets. We can skateboard, skydive, eat Krispy Kremes all day long. We can go faster than the speed limit, and we can feed the alligators despite the fact that every lake has a sign that tells you not to do that. This free will thing, it's a bit of a burden, isn't it? I mean, because it kind of eliminates the blame game, right? I mean, if we live in free will, then it's really not anybody else's fault. But what if time was a stewardship deal? That it's something that we've been trusted with, like our spouses and our children and our resources and our talents. What if time is a matter of divine accountability? Would it change how we saw it? Would it change how we treated it? You see, time is God-given. We all treat it differently. There's not a single person in the room that treats time exactly in the same way. As Tony shared with us, the author of Ecclesiastes would have us believe that we move through life in seasons. Seasons come, seasons go, and our responsibility is to capitalize on each season we're in, all of it under the umbrella of God. So for a lot of years, Dee Dee and I were like many of you in this room. We were in a season of parenting. Everything revolved around parenting, those decisions, where we had to be, what they were doing. Everything was parenting. And now we are in a happier, more blissful, gloriously boring empty nest season. And the empty nesters in the room want you young parents in the room to go, hang on, it's lovely, it's beautiful, it's amazing. I love my kids, but I'm glad they're gone. Listen. I love spending time with my wife. Turns out, still after 35 years, we're in love. But turns out also, we still like each other. That's amazing, because I can love anybody. But to like somebody, that's a different deal. So I don't know if she likes me, but I like her a lot. So there was also a season before ministry when I grew a business. And there were a ton of things that I wish I'd have done differently in that season. For some of you in the room, you're in a season called retirement. I certainly hope you're enjoying it, because most of you couldn't wait for it to get here. So if you're miserable in retirement, how sad is that? The thing to keep in mind is that we are to be radiant in all these seasons. There's never to be a season for a Christian where you're intended to do it without Jesus. It's never supposed to be dull. It's never supposed to be dim. It's never supposed to be without joy, no matter what the season brings. For many people, there are things in life we assign for a season called when the time is right. I hear this phrase all the time, when the time is right, I will do this or that. It's what James was trying to tell us. It's an imaginary time that allows for plenty of wiggle room and a lifestyle responsive to just whatever the best offer is now, if we're honest. Generally, we attach when the time is right as a qualifier to our health and our spiritual lives. And what cracks me up about that is a failure to care for both of these areas leads to death, both physically and spiritually. As you know, in my early life, it was all shaped by team sports and coaches. I'm sure I had plenty of teachers that wanted to shape my life. It's just that coaches spoke a language that I understood, right? So they took wet clay and began molding me to eventually become what I hope is a man of character integrity. It was a coach who asked me early in my life, why would you ever wait to put off becoming the best version of yourself today? Why would you wait to become the best version? The way we would say it in this church is, why would we not grasp today the person that God created you to be? And then he would say, no one ever accomplishes anything of significance by making excuses. I'm reminded that strong men and women are forged on the anvil fires of adversity. Excuses are for those who have not planned well. I tell my Eastern Florida students all the time, a failure to plan on your part for the deadline does not constitute an emergency on my part, much less an extension in the deadline. All right? And I get lots and lots of excuses. The coach that was at Florida when I got there, this is how old I am. I'm just not going to talk about how old I am. The coach when I got there was a guy named Charlie Powell, right? And he had a saying that he said it all the time, that the person who makes excuses never makes a difference. The person that makes excuses never makes a difference. He also taught me the importance of being on time. If he called a team meeting at 2 p.m., he locked the door at 1:50, and you weren't allowed in. You were not allowed in. Whatever time you were told, you had better get there and be in your seat 10 minutes early. You only got locked out one time, right? This is trained behavior, right? Trained behavior. Even in our house, it was such a big deal for DDI. We didn't have kids. We still to this day call it Charlie Pell time at our house. Listen, what time are we going to be? It's Charlie Pell time, 10 minutes ahead of schedule, right? We're just trying to do that. The truth is there are always excuses laying around for us to pick up and throw at just about anything. And I've been guilty as anyone of throwing them. You've heard me preach about the importance of knowing what is at stake in every circumstance. Because in every moment of time, there is something that is at stake. Something that will be missed. Something that could be lost if you don't show up or give your best. I'm convinced that most people are not ignorant about this. They're not ignorant about what they're supposed to be doing or what even the right thing is. But they're waiting until the time is right. You know, I know what the right thing is, but I'm just kind of waiting till the time is right. Waiting until they graduate, waiting till they get married, get a job, have kids, buy a house, get another job, have another kid, get their kids in school, buy another house, get their kids out of school, then somehow get out of debt, hopefully in time for them to enjoy retirement. Oh, if the time is right. But at what expense did you do all those things? Listen, the excuses for why people aren't the people God created them to be, the excuses as to why we're not radiant, the reasons why we're not in the kingdom game, they are littered along a wide path. But narrow is the road Christians are called to walk, and there is no room in that path for excuses. You will always find successful people accelerating across the finish line. Nobody's breaking into heaven. Successful people are accelerating across the finish line. Don't miss this. The enemy will always make sure the word tomorrow is in your vocabulary. Because if he can keep the word tomorrow in your vocabulary, then it robs you of the power of today. Because after all, I have tomorrow. People who procrastinate are either consumed with fear or obsessed with comfort, and neither of which are biblical and reflect a faith in Jesus Christ. Right? We just need to own that. It's just, you're either consumed with fear, or you're so consumed with comfort that you just can put it off till tomorrow. So what is it we are supposed to be doing? What is it that we've been putting off? What is the best use of our time? Do you need to forgive someone? Maybe you need to start a new career. Maybe you need to change your major. Trust God with your resources. Invite a neighbor or coworker to church. Confess a sin before God. Stop a destructive habit. All of these come with ready-made, brand new, out-of-the-box excuses for why you can't do them. So I ask you this morning, what have you been putting off till the time was right, or better, or more convenient? What have you put off that actually needs to happen today? Let's face it, spiritual procrastination is really just an insult to God. Listen carefully. You can hear it. You can hear it. The clock is ticking. It's just ticking. As I speak, it continues to tick. I believe God has given us this time, this moment. None of us are promised more than the breath that we take right now, which makes this a really, really important breath. I've discovered that God will never trust us with what is next if we are not being faithful and obedient to what is in front of us right now. And usually about right now is when you hear a sermon, you get to this place, and the mental roadblocks and stop signs start popping up in your head. Because after all, Corky, you just don't know my life. I mean, what do you know about this? You work one day a week. You work one day. How hard could your life be? Work one day a week. I'd like to work one day a week. That's what I'd like to do, is what you're thinking. And right now you're thinking about all the reasons why I could not possibly understand anything about your life. And you're popping those stop signs. And the reason I know that is because every time Nancy or Con or one of our elders tries to help me with my crazy life, I do the same thing. I put those same things. You just don't understand. Right? We do this. In my ministry, I've done way more funerals than anyone would want to do, and with rare exception, none of them are on anyone's calendar ahead of time. No one schedules a funeral beforehand. And if Dee Dee starts planning my funeral, I count on one of you to tell me. Just be honest so that I know, right? Seriously, I get to frequently live in the tension of how precious time is and how precious and fragile life is. It's been my experience that nothing bad happens during office hours. Literally, it's amazing how that is. Nothing bad happens during office hours. Nobody calls at 2 o'clock and says, I have a loved one who's dying in the hospital and you come. They call it 2 in the morning, right, is when this generally happens. It happens in the middle of the night. I have actually gotten up, responded to a crisis, left the house, come back home, gotten back in bed, and Dee Dee didn't ever know I was gone. That's a big bed, but I'm just saying. I mean, it's just like, you can sleep really well. So here's what I say all this to say that I'm thinking about time all the time. Because not only am I managing my own time, I'm having it invaded by the urgencies of others all the time. And here's the reality no one talks about. Every time you say yes to something, you are generally saying no to something or someone else. When it comes to time, there are both winners and there are losers. And way too often, if we're honest with ourselves, the losers are God and family. When it comes to this issue of time, the losers are God and family. Church, I don't care what you do in life, whether you lead a church, go to school, run a business, manage a household, you simply can't do everything any more than you can please everyone all the time. If your family can't afford everything, you know that. You can't sign your kids up for every activity. You cannot be at 2 places at one time, and you for sure cannot have quality family time if you are on your phone. There simply is not enough time. Or so we've been told. Dee Dee and I were in Gainesville Friday night. We had dinner. Table next to us, because you discovered last week we just liked to watch going on at the table next to us. And so it was just an odd family. So the father is on his phone. The boy is reading a book. And the mom is looking at both of them like, and nobody is saying a word. Literally, we heard no noise other than the clank of forks from the table next to us. Right? We've gone out to dinner. And we're going to spend money for it. We're not going to speak to each other. I don't get it. Maybe they don't like each other. I don't know. The fact is, here's the fact. Time is always connected to our choices. The choices we make. Every day we make choices about how we spend our time. We make choices between children and hobbies, saying yes to one thing and no to another. We make choices between talking to our kids or handing them our phone to entertain them. We make a choice between our spouses and our friends. We make choices about sleep and exercise. Listen, nothing on this list other than the phones is an evil or a bad thing. But all of them reflect what you have decided is most important with your time. For the most part, most of these things are good in the moment. But have we paused long enough to ask ourselves, is this something God would have for us? Do we measure what is at stake when we speak those simple 3-letter word yes? Have we measured our yes? Again, because we're not thinking about time as something we're trusted with, as I said last week, it's what causes most churches and most people to go down a path of mediocrity. Some churches say yes to way too many things, and they wear out their staffs and their volunteers and their leaders, and pretty soon no one is sharing ministry. They're just trying to sustain it. I tell our leaders all the time, just because we did it once doesn't make it an annual event. We are constantly saying yes to some things, and we are saying no to hundreds of things around here. Life and how you live it is always a choice. The problem, I believe, is we haven't given ourselves permission to say no. We aren't thinking time is precious. We have become a FOMO culture. Are you familiar with the FOMO culture? Fear of missing out. We are so terrified that our neighbors, our friends, the people at our work are going to get to do something that we don't do or can't find time to do. And so we sign up for stuff we have no business signing up for. I mean, after all, we want people to like us. And we will sacrifice all kinds of things for an approval rating. Why do you think social media has things like likes and thumbs up, right? It's because we thrive off that stuff. People feed off that stuff. I need somebody to like me. I need somebody to say, oh, thumbs up. That was a good post right there. I'm really glad you're out. Have a good time, right? Let me share a fact with you. No one else is thinking about your time or your life when they ask for it. No one else is thinking about your time or your life when they ask for it. They're only thinking about themselves and what they want in that moment. This is a universal fact. A couple of years ago, one of our elders coined this phrase. Sylvia Garner described my leadership style as like watching someone play an intense game of chess, always thinking six moves ahead, thinking about what needs to be given up for the greatest kingdom impact, to position ourselves for greater leverage in our community and glorify God. Living and leading this way drives my family and the staff nuts. I hate surprises. I hate surprises. I knew Nancy's announcement before she made it. I hate surprises. Did I tell you that I hate surprises, right? Right? Listen, I want to know what all the variables are. I like having a plan. I like to keep everything out in front of me. I want to be intentional and not accidental about the way I live and lead life. And every week, I prayerfully lay out the coming week, and I'm intentional about margin and divine interruptions because they happen without warning every week. And I don't want to be caught waiting for the time to be right for anything. Let me share this morning one thing that I'm getting better at, and that is planning things with Dee Dee. I wasn't always good at that, but I'm getting really good at that. She is a gift in my life, and I want to be found maximizing this gift of time with her because it's precious, and she's precious to me. And in order for this to succeed, I have to say no to more things, some good things, some fun things, some of your things, simply because she is a better thing. Right? For 8 weeks, I gave my Sunday afternoons to 12 sixth graders, which means that I was pretty well fried by 4 p.m. Fried. All right? Crispy. I know one day a week is all I mean, that make any sense to you, but I was fried. Right? There wasn't the mother of all naps that recovered from that day. It just, and the older I get, the harder it gets. Right? But I'm just telling you this as honestly as I can, that what that meant for me is that we said no to anything Sunday evenings for 8 weeks. That means Dee Dee and I didn't go to dinner with friends. We didn't go out. We didn't go to a movie. I just came home crispy on the edges, fried, right? But here's why I do it. Because I believe that time with them is the better thing. Time with those young people, for them to know their pastor loves them, is a better thing. So I had to say yes to that, but no to literally dozens of things. Because I believe life is about priorities. Everything requires time. It's the only true universal condition. All work takes place in time and uses up time. And yet most people take for granted this unique, irreplaceable, and necessary resource. Nothing else perhaps distinguishes effective people as much as their tender, loving care of time. As your time goes, so goes your life. Unless we steward our time wisely, there's absolutely no way that you can fulfill the God goals and God purposes for your life. We cannot create any more of this limited commodity. You and I were given the same number of hours a day that were given to Helen Keller and Louis Pasteur and Michelangelo and Mother Teresa and Leonardo da Vinci and Thomas Jefferson and Albert Einstein and Nick Saban. All of us were given the same number of hours a day. How we choose to view and use these same 24 hours a day can transform us from time-crunched average person to efficient, effective influence in the kingdom. But to be sure, the clock is ticking. Here's the whole deal. The band can come whenever they're ready. Time eventually runs out. Life in this world will end. And when it does, all you will have is what you've left in its place. As we said a few weeks ago, this will be your legacy for good or for bad, for good or evil, this will be your legacy. And I have been with hundreds of people during the last days and weeks before joining Jesus, and all of them would have given anything to have a little bit more time. In other words, there is this constant feeling and tug that things are still undone all the way to the end. It just doesn't happen at the end of the day. It happens at the end of your life. The psalmist writes, "Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom." To paraphrase, I believe he is saying, Lord, keep us mindful of the fact that there is a deadline. There is an end to life here so that we will approach our time with wisdom and discernment and clarity. Listen, church, time is not an enemy. It's emotionless. It's not discriminating. It's not even discerning. It doesn't care about your feelings, and it will totally and completely be responsive to the choices you make. Time is a gift, and we get to decide how we spend it. Listen, you should know this about me. I have read all the books on time management. I had a choice this morning of giving you a 12-point sermon on how to better use your time. It was crazy. I know all the stuff. I'm currently reading a book called Unhitching from the Crazy Train. I'm reading that book right now. I could stand up here and share all the pithy time management lessons I have learned from countless books. Things like understanding the difference between being efficient and effective, using the Johari window so we can separate important from urgent, memorizing Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, adopt an off-peak lifestyle for when you do things, never start a day till you've planned a day, develop a top 6 list every morning of the things that are most important in the day, eat the frog first, you know this principle, do the hardest things first, work all the time you're at work, be at home all the time you're at home, learn to delegate, practice Sabbath, that's in this book, right? The thing is, all the advice in the world is worthless if you do not first learn to measure and care for the precious gift. It's worthless if you don't value the gift because the clock is ticking. The best advice I think I can give you is Matthew 6:33, which says, seek first the kingdom of God and everything else will be added unto it. Radiance comes from spending time with God. Surely God deserves more than our leftovers. When God calls me home, or Jesus returns, whatever comes first, I want him to find me leveraging this gift of time for one thing, and that's making Jesus known till the whole world hears. That's the only thing I want him finding me doing, making Jesus known till the whole world hears everywhere I go. Everything else is what Jesus said will be added onto that. It's a bonus gift from a loving Father who blesses you with many things. Everything else. We're all bound by time. How are you going to spend yours? Because I know as soon as you walk out that door today, you're not going to be 10 minutes from here before there'll be a choice in front of you about how you spend your afternoon, how you spend your time, who you're going to give it to. Every one of you who has quit reading your Bible journal did so because time factored into that somehow. You chose something else over that. Again, it's not guilt. This is reality. Every day, this gift of time opens up. As soon as you open your eyes, you go, this is not heaven, right? Because I think in heaven, the bed's made for you before you get out of it. As soon as you open that eye, you're given a gift of time. And then what you do with it is up to you all day long. And all of God's children said.